From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. Doc Watson has been called a living national treasure because of his virtuoso flat picking and his repertoire of traditional folk and bluegrass tunes. There's a new career retrospective of his work, a 4-CD box set issued by Vanguard Records. On today's archive edition of Fresh Air, we'll feature a 1988 interview with Watson and a 1989 studio concert. Also, film critic Stephen Schiff reviews the movie that's become a phenomenon, Waiting to Exhale. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Craig Windham. The Arctic cold front that left a foot of snow in the Plain States has been sweeping eastward today, causing temperatures to plummet from yesterday's unseasonable highs in the Midwest and East. In advance of the front, torrential rains have been causing problems for areas in the East still cleaning up from the blizzard nearly 2 weeks ago. Vincent Thompson of member station WHYY in Philadelphia reports.
The National Weather Service has posted a flood watch for a good portion of Pennsylvania and New Jersey. Up to 1 inch of rain is possible today. The high rain, melting snow, poor drainage, and wind gust of up to 40 miles an hour is resulting in flooding. In Philadelphia, the flooding and fog coming off melting snow is causing traffic headaches. There have been dozens of accidents, and some major Philadelphia roadways have been closed because of flooding. Drivers are being warned by police to be cautious in low-lying areas where water might be deep and avoid them if all possible. At Philadelphia International Airport, the high winds are causing delays on both inbound and outbound flights. For National Public Radio, I'm Vincent Thompson in Philadelphia.
A promise from Serbia's president has paved the way for an exchange of prisoners of war in Bosnia, as called for by the Dayton Peace Accord. A U.S. envoy says Slobodan Milosevic promised to help account for the fate of thousands of missing Muslims. The Bosnian government then agreed to the swap, which is now underway. German police have released 4 people detained in connection with a fire at a refugee center that killed at least 10 people and injured about 50 more. NPR's Dietra Berger reports.
3 of the 4 were taken into custody for questioning yesterday because they were near the site of the blaze in Lübeck shortly after the fire began. But state prosecutors say they had an alibi. Charges against the 3 young men have been dropped. A 4th man, detained by police yesterday, was also released. Criminal experts entered the remains of the house today to start investigating if the blaze was an accident or the result of arson. Results are first expected next week. Since German unification, refugee shelters have been frequent targets of right-wing violence. But prosecutors in Lübeck say there is no evidence yet the latest fire was caused by arson. I'm Dietra Berger in Frankfurt.
Commerce Secretary Ron Brown says the overall outlook for the economy remains impressive. He was commenting after the government reported the economy grew at an annual rate of 3.2% in the 3rd quarter of last year. That's higher than previous estimates. Brown says the U.S. economy has never enjoyed such low unemployment, inflation, and interest rates. The Labor Department today says unemployment last month held steady at 5.6%. There was a big gain in manufacturing employment as Boeing workers ended their strike and returned to their jobs. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is now up over 61 points at 5,185 in heavy trading of 395 million shares. This is NPR News. The gunmen who had been holding over 240 people hostage on a Black Sea ferry boat have thrown their weapons overboard and surrendered to Turkish authorities. The leader of the hijackers said their action was aimed at halting the Russian assault on Chechen separatists who were holed up in a southern Russian village. In Muslim Turkey, many people sympathize with the drive for independence in Chechnya, which is largely Muslim as well. A reporters' watchdog group has accused Russia of resorting to extreme measures to prevent journalists from covering the Russian assault against the Chechen rebels. The crisis turned into a bloodbath. From Paris, Lynn Terry reports.
The watchdog group, Reporters Without Borders, says it's written to Russian President Boris Yeltsin complaining about a number of incidents. The group said Russian troops had opened fire to scare away a correspondent for the New York Times, that Russian troops unleashed police dogs against reporters, and that they bit a journalist from the Christian Science Monitor and a cameraman for ABC Television. The group also complained about the arrest of a crew for the British TV agency WTN and the seizure of its equipment. Reporters Without Borders said that journalists were systematically barred by Russian security forces from approaching the village where the hostage-taking took place. The nine-day crisis ended with Russian troops storming the village. It's not known exactly how many people died in the attack. For National Public Radio, I'm Lynn Terry in Paris.
House and Senate negotiators have approved a new $265 billion defense bill after removing some elements that caused the president to veto the original version. Gone or revised are provisions that would have ordered construction by the year 2003 of a limited missile defense system and restricted the president's power to commit U.S. troops to international peacekeeping operations. But the bill still contains elements Mr. Clinton found objectionable, including one that requires the discharge of any military personnel who test positive for the virus that causes AIDS. I'm Craig Windham, National Public Radio News in Washington.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Doc Watson is one of America's most revered folk musicians. Vanguard Records has just released a career retrospective of his work, four CDs spanning the years 1964 to 71. We're devoting this archive edition of our show to the life and music of Doc Watson. We have a 1988 interview and a 1989 studio concert. But we'll begin with a track from the new box set, Doc Watson, The Vanguard Years. This is from his first Vanguard album called Doc Watson, recorded in 1964.
Let it rain, let it pour, let it rain a whole lot more, 'cause I got them deep river blues. Let the rain drive right on, let the waves sweep along, 'cause I got them deep river blues. My old gal's a good old pal, and she looks like a waterfowl when I get them deep river blues. There ain't no one to cry for me, and the fish all go out on a spree when I get them deep river blues. Give me back my old boat, I'm gonna sail if she'll float, 'cause I got them deep river blues. I'm going back to Muscle Shoals, times are better than I'm told, 'cause I got them deep river blues. Let it rain, let it pour, and let it rain a whole lot more, 'cause I got them deep river blues. Let the rain drive right on, let the waves sweep along, 'cause I got them deep river blues.
Doc Watson recorded in 1964. Doc Watson is the guitarist who's usually called the finest flat picker in the country. The only argument you're likely to get about that is from people who don't want to praise his playing at the expense of praising his singing. Throughout much of his career, he performed and toured with his son, guitarist Merle Watson. In 1985, Merle was tragically killed in a tractor accident. Doc Watson holds a music festival in Merle's memory every spring in North Carolina. Doc Watson was born in Deep Gap, North Carolina. His father was a musician, although not a professional performer, but he introduced Doc to playing by making him his first banjo.
That was in the summer of 1934. Made my first little stringed instrument. I had a harmonica before that. But Dad showed me a few of the old-time Fraylin or Clawhammer banjo-style tunes, and one day he brought it to me and put it in my hands and said, "Son, I want you to learn to play this thing real well. Some of these days we'll get you a better one," he said. "Might help you get through the world."
And what was it like for you the first time you got the banjo into your hands? What did you do with it?
I remember how I felt, but I don't remember hardly what it was like learning the first tunes. It was kind of hard for Dad to show me because I couldn't see his hands. But he finally got across to me. how to do the licks on the banjo and how to note the thing. And I could figure out where the notes were because it was fretless. And you could slide along with your fingers, and finally you come to the right one, you know, and you found out how to get there without missing them.
So you were really pretty self-taught.
For the most part, yes, I was. The guitar, absolutely, I was self-taught.
How did you get your first guitar?
One spring, my dad told my youngest brother and I, boys, if you'll cut all those dead chestnut, small dead chestnuts down along the road and around the edge of the field there, you can sell it for pulpwood to the tannery. And we went at it, and we cut a couple of big truckloads. It didn't make us a mint of money, but it made me enough to buy me a good little guitar from, well, I thought it was good at the time, from Sears Roebuck. And my younger brother ordered him a suit of clothes.
Now, considering that your early instruments were homemade banjos and a mail-order guitar, did you ever get really obsessed with the quality of instruments that you were playing? Some musicians just play what they have, and others get really obsessed with having instruments that are just right for them or custom-made for them.
I was fairly contented with what I had. I never had had my hands on a good guitar back in those days and didn't for years. The first good guitar that I got hold of that I would have considered much better than my mail-order box was a Martin guitar that Richard Green used to have a little music store under his, he had a boarding house or an inn there in Boone. And I went in there one day with that little mail-order thing, and he said, why don't you let me help you get you a good guitar? And I said, gosh, it costs too much. And he said, I'll tell you what I can do. I can get you a good Martin D18 that will be a price that you can afford, and I'll take the payments down to $5 a month. And I couldn't beat that. I paid it off quicker than that, but I couldn't beat that with a stick. And at that time, I was playing at the little fruit stand and a little bean market they had in Boone and making me a few shekels on Saturday, having a good time of picking, and I paid for the guitar that summer. He got me that thing at his cost, and it cost $90. Oh, Lord, I was proud of that guitar. But in all truth, compared to my guitar now, it was like fretting a fence. It was really hard to play.
Well, I guess it's almost good in a way to get used to something like that, because it makes it seem so much easier when you get a good guitar.
Oh, it really does. And when I got into the folk revival in the 60s, I ran into people who could set a guitar action up to where you could play it, and I came on to another Martin along about that time. Played a Gibson at first on the road, borrowed. Then I came into another Martin, and the action was brought down to where you could play it.
My guest is Doc Watson. You know, I'm glad you brought up the folk revival. It was really during the folk revival that you started to become nationally known. I think you'd been playing dances and you know, playing
played
in your
rockabilly music through the 50s and played an electric guitar, Les Paul.
Well, see, this really interests me. You were playing rockabilly and an electric guitar.
Mm-hmm. And rockabilly and old pop standards with an old boy named Jack Williams. Jack had a little group together, and when he heard me pick, he said, buddy, I want you to pick with me.
Well, I want to play something that was recorded by Ralph Rinsler. Ralph Rinsler recorded it. You were performing.
In my living room. In my living room, yeah.
And this is a recording. It was from the early 1960s, and this is Everyday Dirt. Tell us a little bit about this song before we hear this.
A fellow, David McCarn, was living in a mill town, Gastonia, North Carolina, and he heard about some recording sessions going on down, I think it was Knoxville, Tennessee, and he probably slung his guitar over his back knowing how those poor old boys fared. He and a fella, Howard, I've forgotten his given name, went over to Knoxville and recorded a bunch of things, and Everyday Dirt was one of the songs that happened in our little record collection when I was a little boy. And those words are just, oh, you know, they're automatic. I didn't even have to think about the lyrics on that. I did have to work at picking it. I learned it off the old 78 record that McCarn recorded.
Okay, so from the early 1960s, this is my guest, Doc Watson.
Now John come home, all in a wonder, he rattled at the door just like thunder. Who is that, Mr. Henley cried, 'tis my husband you must hire. John said, down by the fireside weeping, and up that chimney he got to peeping. There he saw that poor old soul setting up a straddle of the pot rack pole. Then John built on a rousing fire just to suit his own desire. His wife got out with a free good will. Don't do that for the man you'll kill. John drenched up and down he fetched him like a coon. When a dog had catched him, he blacked his eyes and then did better. Kicked him out right on his setter. Then his wife, she crawled in under the bed and he pulled her out by the hair of the head. And when I'm gone, remember then, he kicked her where the chinches had been.
Recorded in the early 1960s, that's my guest, Doug Watson. How did you learn how to pick that way? We found out that you were self-taught, but it seems like it would be really hard to teach yourself an intricate style.
Well, by listening to the old records, you could hear, after you got familiarized with the instrument, you could hear what strings they were hitting on and what chord they were playing in just by the sound. After all, music is sound. And I think if anybody learns the guitar properly, they shouldn't, as soon as they can get to where they can, stop looking at the neck and play without doing that, unless it's something really hard that you're getting into. You know, you need to memorize the distances and the jumps on the neck. Well, as I said, music is sound, and I could tell what the guy was doing, the little slide licks on there where he goes down to a certain note and then jumps back up there. All the chords are sound to me. It's like you reading something once I was familiar with the guitar.
We're featuring a 1988 interview with Doc Watson. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our 1988 interview with Doc Watson. Once you went on the road during the folk revival, now you weren't used to traveling. There must have been a lot you learned had to learn how to do. Did you have a business manager to help you out with bookings? And
Ralph Rensler did the bookings between he and Manny Greenhill of Folklore Productions. But Ralph traveled a lot with me, and if he didn't, when I went go to New York to work in the city, I came by Trailways bus. Someone would always meet me at the Port Authority and take me over to Ralph's apartment. I worked lots of times. I'd work at Gertie's Folk City a week or 2 weeks at a time, doing either opening act or just playing the job straight there. It was scary. I was as green as a green apple as far as the city. Country boy, really.
Oh, yeah, sure.
As the old timers used to say, a hayseed for sure. But the scary part finally, and the adventure finally got over with, and that road, it became a job.
Yeah,
music, a good audience, I love.
I think there's always clubs who, not many, but there's always some clubs willing to take advantage of a performer. And I would guess that someone who was blind was a more likely target if they didn't have people who were watching out for them. Would you ever have any problems with that?
I was glad when my son Merle started on the road with me, because if we went to a place and they didn't treat me too good, Dad, we won't come back here anymore. And that was the end of it. I'd tell Mr. Greenhill, don't book that anymore. That was the end of it. We didn't hit too many places that they weren't really decent to us, but once in a great while there, of course, I won't call any names because we're on nationwide radio. But we were in a few places where they treated you like pieces of used equipment. And that was the end of playing there. We just didn't do it again. That's the best thing you can do, is not tolerate that. Just move away.
You mentioned your son Merle. Did you teach him how to play guitar?
No. Merle didn't show any interest in the guitar until he was 15. I was on my first concert tour, a little solo concert tour that spring, and about middleways of it, Ralph called me and said, Doc, I've got some good news. And I said, well, lay it on me. And he said, Merle has started playing the guitar. His mother, Rosalie, started him on the guitar. She taught him his first chords and showed him how to play them and a little bit about timing, and he just took it and went with it. And we met John Hurt for the first time that same summer. We went to the Berklee Folk Festival, and Merle played backup guitar for me. He'd only been playing about 3 months, and he played backup guitar on the stage. And when we met John Hurt, Merle was enthralled by John's finger style on the guitar, and he took that and added a few little notions of his own, and that's where Merle's finger style came from.
So he never felt that he had to work hard to differentiate his style from your style?
Merle, once in a while he'd ask me for some pointers on a melody to a song or something, but Merle played his very own thing on the guitar. I don't think he even ever asked me how to hold the pick. He probably looked at the way I held it. But I never really sat down and taught him how you get this note or that note. I just played a song and sang it, and he jumped in there and learned the lead to it.
When your son Merle died, was it hard for you to go back on the road afterwards?
if you'll pardon a little intimacy here, I'll tell you something that happened or I wouldn't have. Between the time he was killed and his funeral, I dreamed I was in a dark desert, and it was so hot you couldn't breathe. And the sand was pulling me down like if you were in quicksand, and that big strong hand reached back and said, "Come on, Dad, you can make it." And he brought me, led me out to where it was cool, but there was sunny, but there was a cool breeze. And I waked up and I thought, well, I'll try. And I took up the last job on that particular tour that we'd canceled. And my friend Jack Lawrence had been working some while Merle was off the road with us for quite a while, and Jack stayed on as the other guitarist. And I'm kind of glad I did. If I had stayed off the road a month, I never would have come back. It was so hard, you know. You couldn't know Terry, but it was really hard to go back out there without him.
But I guess that dream kind of gave you permission in a way to do it.
I believe it was godsend, I think, mm-hmm, the dream mm-hmm. was.
I want to play a record with you and Merle performing, and this is from an album you recorded together, the Doc Watson, Merle Watson guitar album, and this is Talking to Casey, and Merle Watson is featured on slide guitar. Doc and Merle Watson. Doc Watson is my guest. You know, can I ask you a question that I hope you don't mind me asking, and if you do, don't answer it. A lot of performers who are blind wear dark glasses when they perform, and that's something you've never done.
I don't know why. I always hated, used to have had a good bit of light perception. Doesn't bother me now because most of it's gone. But the reflection off sunglasses, you know how it'll come in on the sides. I guess they make them now, it won't do it. But boy, they used to try to get me to wear them. I reckon they didn't like the way my eyes looked. A lot of people would say you ought to wear sunglasses. I hated them.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't do it. And I just never have worn them. I don't know if the blind that wear them, their eyes look really abnormal or what. I don't know. I never did care to wear them, just didn't do it.
Right.
No particular reason except what I told you.
Yeah, well, I could certainly understand that. I mean, I don't understand why they need to be worn by... I guess it's preference, just whether you want to wear them or not.
I suppose, yeah.
One last thing. You know, there's a really nice recording on the album that we heard earlier from the early 60s of you and your wife singing together. Does she still sing? Do you ever sing together?
She doesn't sing anymore or play anymore. The tragedy of losing Merle, Terry, has just about undone her. She does the office work there at home, but she's not Rosalie anymore. Bless her little heart. I don't know, sometimes I just want to cry. And, you know, especially when I'm away from her, I do, when I think about it. I try not to and try to encourage her what I can, but it's been tough on her, and she can't seem to get over the loss. The grief really has her yet.
Yeah, I can understand. Well, you'll be able to spend more time together when you retire. I regret we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for coming, for talking with us about music, and thank you very much, and I hope you have a good continuing year on the road.
I'll guarantee you it's been a pleasure.
Doc Watson recorded in 1988. By the way, he said something about retiring. Well, he's still performing. After our interview in 1988, we hoped Doc Watson would return sometime for a concert. He did the following year, and we'll hear that concert in the second half of today's archive edition. Vanguard Records has just released a 4-CD retrospective of Watson's work. It includes this 1964 recording of Rising Sun Blues, featuring Doc and Merle Watson. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
There is a house down in New Orleans. They call the Rising Sun. And it's been the ruin of a many poor boy and me, oh God, for one. Then fill the glasses to the brim. Let the drinks go merrily around. And we'll drink to the health of a rounder poor boy who goes from town to town. The only thing that a rounder needs is a suitcase and a trunk. And the only time he's satisfied is when he's on the drunk.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by this and other NPR member stations and by Borders, where the love of books and music sets the standard. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Doc Watson is one of the world's greatest flat-picking guitarists. Coming up from the archives, our 1989 Fresh Air concert, featuring Doc Watson and his longtime accompanist, guitarist Jack Lawrence. Also, Stephen Schiff reviews Waiting to Exhale. Thank you. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're devoting this archive edition of our show to Doc Watson. Vanguard Records has just released a 4-CD retrospective of his work. Earlier, we heard a 1988 interview with Doc Watson. Now we're going to feature a concert he recorded in our studio in 1989. Doc Watson is considered the finest flat picker in the country. He was one of the performers who inspired the folk revival of the 60s. Our concert featured a series of duets between Doc Watson and his longtime accompanist, guitarist Jack Lawrence. I want to welcome both of you to Fresh Air. And Doc Watson, can I ask you to introduce the first song?
Thank you, Terry. I think we'll do one that my son Merle and I learned from John Hurt. A good old tune called Make Me Down a Pallet on Your Floor. Down a pallet on your floor, make me down a pallet on your floor. Honey, won't you make it down, make it soft and low, and then maybe my good gal, she won't know. I'm going up the country through that sleet and snow, going up the country through that sleet and snow. Yes, I'm going up the country through that sleet and snow. Ain't no telling just how far I'll go. Get my breakfast here and my dinner in Tennessee. Get breakfast here and dinner in Tennessee. Gonna get my breakfast here, my dinner in Tennessee. Told you I was coming, so you better look for me. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Honey, won't you make it down, make it soft and low. Then maybe my good gal, she won't know. What do you think about it, Jack? Yeah, I like that notion right there. Well, you know that I can't lay down on your bed. Now, honey, I can't lay down on your bed. No, baby, can't lay down across that pretty bed. Cause my good woman, she might kill me dead. And don't you let my good gal catch you here. Hey, don't you let my good gal catch you here. If you do, she may shoot you. She might cut and stab you too. Ain't no telling what that gal might do. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Honey, won't you make it down? Make it soft and low. And then maybe my good gal, she won't know. The way I've been sleeping, my back and shoulders tired. The way I've been sleeping, my back and shoulders tired. Yeah, the way I've been sleeping, my back and shoulders tired. I think I'll turn and try sleeping on my side. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Honey, won't you make it down, make it soft and low. And then maybe my good gal, she won't know. Let's play some country counterpoint, son. Down a pallet on your floor. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Honey, make it over. Close behind that door. Make it where your good man will never go.
All right.
Guitar straps will squeak, Jack. That's the way it works. I'd like to do a little tune here that I used to hear Brownie and Sonny do. Excuse me. It's a blues that everybody's had at one time or another. It's called Stranger Blues. 2, 3, 4. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm a stranger here. I just blowed in your town. Yes, I'm a stranger here. I just blowed in your town. And just because I'm a stranger, you don't have to dog me round. Well, sometimes I wonder why some people treat a stranger so. Sometimes I wonder why some people treat a stranger so. Can't find a place to stay, I just go from door to door. Well, I'm a stranger here, I just blowed in your town. Yes, I'm a stranger here, I just blowed in your town. And just because I'm a stranger, you don't have to dog me around. Get them blues, Mo. To send up my railroad fare. Yeah, I'll ride home to Daddy to send up my railroad fare. And boys, if he can't send it, well, I don't mind walking there. Well, I'm a stranger here, I just blowed in your town. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm a stranger here, I just blowed in your town. And just because I'm a stranger, you don't have to dog me round. Well, now I'm going back home. Have to wear out 99 pair of shoes. Well, yes, now I am. I'm going back home. Have to wear out 99 pair of shoes. And when I get back down to Dixie, I won't have the stranger blues. Well, I'm a stranger here. I just blowed in your town. Listen to us walking now. Yes, I'm a stranger here. I just blowed in your town. And just because I'm a stranger, you don't have to dog me round.
When the late Jimmie Rodgers did his last sessions in the early 30s, he did some music that sat right in the edge of the big band music of that day. Well, here's a pretty little tune old Jim recorded called Blue Eyed Jane. The sweetest girl in the world lives in my hometown. We fell in love like turtle doves while the moon was shining down. I asked her then, I asked her when the wedding bells would ring. And she said, oh dear, it seems so strange for this to happen here. She is my sugar pie, all of
me, she is the sweetest gal. I love her so, my blue-eyed Jane. And when the sun goes down and the shadows creeping over town, she meets me in the lane, my blue-eyed Jane. Pretty Jack. Listen here, Janie dear, I've come to say farewell. Sweetheart, you know I love you so, much more than there's words to tell. But I must go away today, honey, won't you come with me? 'Cause I'm gonna be blue, missing you, longing every day for you, my blue-eyed Jane. Hold me, you are the sweetest thing. I love you so, my blue-eyed Jane. And when the sun goes down and the shadows creeping over town, please meet me in the lane, my blue-eyed Jane. And when the sun goes down and the shadows creeping over town, then I'll come home to you, my blue-eyed Jane.
Now, how did you both get together, Jack? How did you start playing with Doc Watson?
Well, I was hired in the fall of 83 by a fellow named Merle Watson.
Mm-hmm.
Doc's son, of course. He hired me on because he getting a little tired of the road life, and so in the fall of 83 they called me, and they haven't been able to get rid of me since.
Had you listened to all of Doc Watson's records before you started playing together?
Well, most of them. I started playing in 63 or so, and along with Doc, people like Glenn Campbell Glenn was an influence, and several others.
Do you work out the songs before you play them? How do you go about figuring
sometimes
what an arrangement will be?
Occasionally we'll work them out. Mostly it's arrangements while you wait.
Doc, I should mention that the last time you were on our show last spring, you said that you were thinking of retiring at the end of the year. What's the story with that?
Well, evidently, I decided not to retire at the end of last March. I will retire in the near future, but I'll not expound any farther on the matter.
Are you enjoying being on the road? Or?
I enjoy the music, and I like working with old brother Jack here. He's a pretty good feller, you know, but the road, that's for the birds or something or other.
Would music be a lot better if the audiences all came to you instead of you having to travel around the country?
I don't know about that. If I could travel out to a local good big spot where that'd work fine. That'd be just fine.
We're featuring a 1989 concert with Doc Watson and his longtime accompanist, Jack Lawrence. By the way, Doc Watson has not retired yet. We'll hear more of that concert after a break. This is Fresh Air. Thank you.
Doc Watson and Jack Lawrence joining us for a live concert today, and why don't we get started with another song?
Here's a little tune about an old boy that, that decided he's going to leave home and learn to travel. And he found a pretty little girl and got married and got two for the price of one. And I'll let the song tell you the rest of the tale. It's called Give Me Back My 15 Cents.
Tennessee, and I thought I'd learn to travel, but then I met with a pretty little gal, and soon we played the devil. I loved that gal, and she loved me, and I thought we'd live together, but then we tied that fatal knot, and now I'm gone forever. Give me back my 15 cents, give me back my money, give me back my 15 cents, and I'll go home to Mammy. Yeah, let me hear your opinion. Twas 15 cents to the preacher man and a dollar for the paper. Then dear old mother-in-law moved in, and lordy, what a caper. I fiddled a tune for her one day, and she called me a joker. Then that old sow got mad at me and hit me with the poker. Give me back my 15 cents, give me back my money, give me back my 15 cents, and I'll go home to Mammy. Town and I worked on the farm, but there was no way to suit him. They're both so dead burned mean to me, somebody ought to shoot him. I'm tired of looking at my mother-in-law. I'd like to see my granny. Gonna leave the state of Arkansas and go back home to Mammy. Give me back my 15 cents, give me back my money, give me back my 15 cents, and I'll go home to Mammy. Yeah. Jack, I think a good old train song might be in order right here. Son, I remember that song over there that Brother Jimmy Jett wrote. And I'm going to plug an album right here. I ain't supposed to do this, but it's on an album I did for Sugar Hill called Riding the Midnight Train, a bluegrass album, my first endeavor on pure bluegrass. Greenville Trussell is a song for the train buffs that love the good old steam engine sounds and all that good. I remember when I went to school at Raleigh, there was a train went by every 20 minutes on an average. And this song makes me think of those days. I remember as a boy how in wonderment and joy I'd watch the trains as they'd go by, and the whistle's lonesome sound you could hear for miles around as they rolled across that Greenville Trussell High. But the whistles don't sound like they used to. Lately, not many trains go by. Hard times across this land mean no work for a railroad man, and the Greenville Trussell now don't seem so high.
Thank you, son.
On the river bank I'd stand with my cane pole in my hand and watch the freight trains up against the sky. that black smoke trailing back as they moved along the track that runs across that Greenville trestle high. But the whistles don't sound like they used to. Lately, not many trains go by. Hard times across this land mean no work for a railroad man. And the Greenville trestle now don't seem so high. When the lonesome whistles whined, I'd get rambling on my mind. Lord, I wish they still sounded that way. As I turned to head for home, Lord, she'd rumble low and long toward the sunset at the close of day. But the whistles don't sound like they used to. Lately, not many trains go by. Hard times across this land mean no work for a railroad man. And the Greenville trestle now don't seem so high. No, the Greenville trestle now don't seem so high.
Duck Watson and Jack Lawrence, recorded in the Fresh Air Studio in 1989. Vanguard Records has just released a 4-CD box set called Duck Watson, The Vanguard Years. In the next couple of months, Duck Watson will perform in Pasadena, Santa Cruz, San Francisco, and New York. Coming up, a review of Waiting to Exhale. This is Fresh Air. The surprise hit of the Christmas season was Waiting to Exhale, Forrest Whitaker's adaptation of the 1992 Terry McMillan bestseller. The movie was the biggest hit in the country the week it opened, and soon newspaper and magazine articles were proclaiming it a full-blown phenomenon. A film that had tapped an otherwise untapped audience, middle class, female, and African American. Film critic Stephen Schiff went to see what he thought of the film.
I wish I'd seen this movie at one of those showings that has already become the talk of Hollywood. The ones where middle-class black women welcomed it as a ritual of sisterhood, shouting back at the screen and roaring with delight at the foibles of the useless black men who hound the movie's proud, beautiful black women. Unfortunately, the theater was fairly empty when I saw the film. Behind me, a graying white male chortled happily and occasionally, in an enthusiastic baritone, yelled, "Go, girl!" Still, what was happening on screen was pretty obvious. Forrest Whitaker, who up until now has been an unusual and compelling actor, has directed the movie in the style of a perfume ad. Lots of gauzy close-ups and sliding transitions, not much attention to the nuances of acting, scene building, or character development. The movie tells the story of four girlfriends in Phoenix. Whitney Houston plays a budding TV producer. Loretta Devine is a hairdresser. Layla Rochon is a rising insurance executive. And Angela Bassett plays a housewife. But what a housewife. Her Bernadine has helped her husband, played by Michael Beach, put together a business that has landed them in one of the fanciest houses in town. But of course, like almost all the other men in this movie, he's a dog at heart. And worse, the kind of dog who chases white women on the side. Whatever finesse he may show in the boardroom, he brings none at all back home. Here he is, for instance, breaking the bad news to Bernadine.
I guess there's no appropriate time to tell you this, but I'm going to the party, just not with you. She? Yes. She doesn't want to be alone tonight, and I was thinking, why should she be? I'm leaving you for her.
You wait a minute. I give you 11 years of my life, and you're telling me you're leaving me for another woman.
Thank you, Bernadine, for making this easier for me.
Most of Waiting to Exhale is as blunt and clumsy as that. The women spend the movie longing for a good man. But what turns up, with two fleeting exceptions, is a parade of one-dimensional creeps who are so transparently worthless that the women start seeming idiotic for wanting them. The screenplay by Terry McMillan and Ronald Bass makes matters worse. Instead of exploring the women's character or giving us a convincing portrait of their friendship, it obsesses along with them about trying to catch a man. In the end, the movie makes these women seem as superficial and silly as the man-trapping career girls in a winky 50s romp like How to Marry a Millionaire. Only, unfortunately, they're not as funny. Since the actresses have nothing to work with, they can't do much. Angela Bassett rages and sulks, and Layla Roshan flutters her eyelashes seductively. At least plump Loretta Devine gets to use her extra poundage and her squeaky voice to comic effect. As for Whitney Houston, her performance is so blank that whenever I try to call it to mind, the only image that comes is of her in the video singing the film's hit theme song, all of which makes me think that maybe she should go back to singing, and that Forrest Whitaker should go back to acting, and that black middle-class women not only deserve better men, but better movies.
Stephen Schiff is critic at large for The New Yorker. Fresh Air's senior producer is Danny Miller. Our engineers this week are Joyce Lieberman, Audrey Bentham, Chris Fraley, and Al Banks. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Roberta Shirock directs the show. Our theme music was composed by Joel Forrester and performed by the Microscopic Septet. Special thanks to our intern, Phoebe Vanskoy. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.